Good morning to everyone from beautiful downtown Myrtle Beach in South Carolina in the United States. And I'd like to begin by expressing our appreciation to the Shire and Weingarten families from Toronto and from New York for dedicating this series in honor of Shoshana Shire and Rabbi David Weingarten. I hope all of you are well, as I've seen you last week. And this morning, we're going to be studying the Haggadah. And I hope all of you have Haggadot with you, because they'll be required for understanding of what we're going to deal with here. I'd like to begin just by asking the following provocative question. Why do we need a Haggadah in the first place? And I think that for us to understand why we require Haggadah, it's important for us to realize that the skill that we've learned before about comparing Mikra to Tanaitic literature in order to understand what the Tanaim added onto the body of Torah, it's important for us to ask ourselves the following question. What in the Torah? The Torah tells us in four places that it's important for us to speak about the Yetziat Mitzrayim to our children. And in one place it says, V'igadata levincha b'yom hahu lemor, that you'll tell your child on that day. But nowhere in the Torah does it define what that day is. And therefore, the Haggadah, as we're going to see, comes to answer the question, what are the parameters of the mitzvah of Haggadah as brought down in the Torah Shbichtav? It's important to note from a historical point of view that the Haggadah that we have in our hands today is basically the creation of the Tanaim of Yavne, specifically the first generation of Yavne. As you go through the Haggadah and you note which Tanaim are mentioned in the Haggadah, you will note that they are virtually all the Chachamim of Yavne. Especially we have the five Zkenim at the beginning of the Magid. And then we also have certain additions onto the Haggadah from the period of Usha, Rabbi Yehuda, etc. But the Rabbi Yose. But it's important to note that nowhere in the Haggadah do we have extensive sources from the Tanaim preceding the Yavne period. And that is probably because the formalization of the Haggadah as a didactic instrument took place after the Churban, when it was necessary to define for Jews how to observe this festival without the Korban Pesach, now that the Beit HaMikdash was no longer with us, and Jews were spreading to the four corners of the world. The Haggadah, of course, was an oral document, not a written document. But this enabled them to have a consistent and steady observance for the Chag, and therefore we have to look at this as a Tanaitic creation from the period of Yavne. And what I'd like to do is to compare the structure of the Magid with what is brought down in the Mishnah, Arvei Psachim, which is Psachim Perek Yud Mishnah Dalet. You don't have that in front of you, but I'll read it. It's not very long. And then we'll examine how the Haggadah fulfills what the Mishnah tells us to do. The Mishnah in Arvei Psachim, Perek Yud Mishnah Dalet, tells us, Mazgulo Kosheni, that when you pour the second cup, Vekan Haben Shoel Et Aviv. And here the child asks his father the questions. V'im Ein Da'at Baben Aviv Melamdo. And if the child doesn't know how to ask on his own, then the father will teach him how to ask, and then we have the bringing in the Mishnah of the four questions that are known to all of us. It's important to note, first of all, that the four questions are considered to be a minimal baseline. That is, the Mishnah says that once you pour the second cup, the child will ask his questions. If the child doesn't know how to ask questions on his own, then you'll teach him the four questions to ask, which will at least cover some of the main elements in the process. And this is indicative of what should be done during the Seder. That is, that what we have in the Haggadah is a minimal baseline. But one is supposed to go further. Kol ha musifa reza mishubach. Kol ha marbele saper b'yatziat Mitzrayim ha reza mishubach. And this is the same for the asking of questions on the part of the children and on the answer on the part of the adults. And we all know that in these four questions, that they're not the same four questions that existed at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, because the question about the Korban Pesach has been replaced by another. And so we have, in back of the four questions, we have a fifth question, we have a fifth question in the background. And this motif runs straight through the Haggadah of four, with a fifth in the background, as we're going to see as we go through our shiur today. What I'm interested in is the next part of the Mishnah, after the four questions. The Mishnah tells us as follows: Ulefi da'ato shel den, aviv milamdo. According to the awareness or the knowledge of the child, the father teaches him. Matchil b'gnut u'misayim b'shvach. He should begin with the negative and end with the positive. V'doresh me'arami oved avi ad shigmor kol ha'parasha kula. And he should then be doresh, he should explain, that is, explain from a value orientational point of view, not just explain on a pshat level. He should be doresh from the words arami oved avi, which, as we all know, are the beginning of the vidui bikurim that's brought down in Devarim Perakav Talit. He should begin explaining from the words arami oved avi ad shigmor kol ha'parasha kula, until he finishes the entire parasha of that's being the child, minimally the four questions that are brought in the Mishnah, that the adult who's conducting the Seder should respond to the child basically in three ways. Number one, lefi da'ato shel ben, that the explanation should be in accordance with the knowledge or the ability of the child to understand. Second of all, matchil bignut u'mesayim b'shvach, he should begin with the negative and proceed to the positive. And lastly, he should be doresh me'arami oved avi, until he finishes the entire parasha. And of course, the pshat of the Mishnah is that these three aspects of the teaching of the Haggadah should be done together. They're all part of the same response. That when the parent is responding to the child, the parent should be careful to respond according to the level of the child. And when he's responding according to the level of the child, he should respond by beginning at the positive and ending at the negative. And he should do this by interpreting the words arami oved avi until the end of the parsha. These are not three different things. They're three aspects of the way that the answer should be given to the child. That's the pshat of the Mishnah. But when we take a look at the Haggadah, we see that the Haggadah did not take this as three aspects of the same answer. It took this as three stages in the development of the mitzvah of the Magid at the Seder. And let's see how that works. If you can open up your Haggadot, please, to the Magid, which, as we all know, begins with Halachma Anya. We're not going to discuss Halachma. After Halachma, we have the pouring of the second cup and the asking of the four questions by the child. And then we have the answer. And the answer constitutes the main part of the Seder. We have the mitzvot achila, we have the mitzvot to eat certain objects, the matzah, the maror, the charoset, to have a su'dat chag, and the physical mitzvot of the mitzvot achila are one side of the Seder, where the other side of the Seder is the mitzvah Haggadah and everything that's connected to it, Haggadah, and also the Hallel, which we're not going to discuss here. We're going to center on the Magid. And so the proper celebration of the Magid, and specifically of the answer or the instruction by the parent to the child, is the heart of the entire Seder. It is, of course, a phenomenon of modern Judaism that it is this heart of the Seder which is suffering cardiac arrest, and that in most Sedarim that we visit, we know that during this part of the Magid, there is the least amount of understanding and comprehension of what's going on. People begin to lose patience. They're interested in moving on in order to get to the mitzvot achila. And it's not because they don't want to read Magid. It's because the structure of the Magid is not clear. It's not clear to the average Jew because they've never had an opportunity to study it. And what I'd like to do here is to demonstrate what the structure of the Magid is and present several simple didactic suggestions that you can use in your homes to put this part of the Magid over in a much more practical and enjoyable fashion. In any event, if we go back to the Haggadah, after the asking of the four questions, first of all, with a couple of introductory paragraphs, we have the first simple answer, Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves and we were taken out. This is the simple headline for the child. As we're going to see, it also figures into the Matzil Bikinut Umesayim B'Shvach. But right now it's just a simple answer. It's a headline for the answer. Children that are very young or not of great intelligence, that cannot absorb the long midrash of Arami Ovidavi, at least they'll understand the main headline of this evening, which is, we were slaves, we went out, we're free, we celebrate this. After that, we have the Maaseh of the five Zkenim, who are sitting in Bnei Brak, and again, these are Chachmei Yavne, the first generation of Nat Yavne, Rabbi Yezer ben Hurkanus, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania, Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Kiva ben Yosef, and Rabbi Tarfon, and they were talking about the Haggadah all night long, in order that we should learn that Kol HaMardela Saper B'Yetziat Mitzrayim Harezim Mishubach. Now, and following that, as it were attached to it, we have the next introductory paragraph, which is Amar Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah, that you should remember the days of the going out of Mitzrayim Kol Yemei Chayecha, and whether you interpret this according to what Ben Zoma said or the Chachamim, it still means that one should remember the Exodus from Egypt at all times. These introductory paragraphs set the stage for the part of the Magid that we're going to deal with, and that is, it begins then. The Magid begins to organize itself according to the Mishnah, to Mishnah Dalet of Perek Yud of Masechet Pesachim. It starts with the Arbat Banim, and the four types of children, the four types of students. And this is because the Mishnah says, after the four questions, it says, Ulefi da'ato shel ben aviv melamdo. According to the knowledge of a child, you should teach the child. That's what the Mishnah says. That's the first instruction. So the first thing to be done is to help parents understand what are the different types of children so that they can match their instruction to the needs of the child. Now, as it's been brought down in many different Perushim, and we won't go into this because of the shortage of time, it's whether these four children represent four different kinds of children or represent four different attitudes of a given child, of any given child or any given human being, that there are times when all of us are chachamim, all of us are rishayim, all of us are tamim, and all of us are inam yudim lishol. But in any event, the purpose of bringing this down is to do what we would call didactic training for parents, that before you start to teach your child, learn a little bit about who your child is. Dalifnei miata omed. Who is the child that is listening to you? And I remember that when I was a Bachor Yeshiva at Yeshiva University, and we lived in Teaneck, New Jersey, and we went to Seder Pesach by one of my Rebbeim who lived in Teaneck, for whom I had tremendous Yirat Kavod, and my wife and I assumed it was going to be the most meaningful Seder of our lives, that here we were going to sit by the Rosh Yeshiva, and he was going to explain to us in depth everything that's going on in the Haggadah. And too bad we can't write it down to remember it forever, but we'll have to try our very best to remember Belpe. And we got to a Seder filled with anticipation and expectation. We sat down to the table, and for the next 3 hours, he didn't look at us. He focused entirely on the children, explaining to them, to each child, in a slightly different way, what exactly is going on with the Seder and with Yetziat Mitzrayim. And as we watched him do this, I realized that what he was doing, he was fulfilling the words of the Mishnah, Lefi da'ato shel ben aviv melamdo. He wasn't categorizing a child as a chacham, a rasha, a tam, or an enu yodei lishol. He was taking those four prototypes in various mixtures and seeing his own children through the eyes of Chazal and asking himself, how would each one of these children require to hear the story? And I think that's exactly what we need to do. As we know, a teacher, the first thing they have to understand is who they're standing in front of and who they're speaking to, and have to watch their words as carefully as they can and choose their expressions and their words carefully. And so when you're talking to children, it's important in the course of your Seder, especially in this Magid part, to address children individually and to try and think of of ways, special ways that speak to each individual child differently. Don't relate to them as a group, relate to them as individuals. Tell every, because it says, Higadata Levincha, it doesn't say Higadata Levanecha, Higadata Levincha, that every one of your children should be viewed as an only child who you're focusing on in order to put over the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim in the best way possible. In any event, after the Arba Abanim, and we fulfill what the Mishnah says, Lefi Da'ato Shel Ben Aviv Melamdo, we then have the question that's brought in the Haggadah. Well, now that we know to whom we're going to be speaking, how do we know that we're supposed to be fulfilling this mitzvah aseh of Higadat Levincha tonight on Seder night? Because after all, the Ta'alich, the process of Yetziat Mitzrayim, did not begin on Seder night. It began 2 weeks earlier on Aleph Nisan, today, and by the way, Chodesh Tov and Shana Tova to all of you. The process began today because it was on this day that Am Yisrael received the instruction from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Mitzrayim to take the keves and to save it for a korban until Yudalit, until the 14th. And so you might think that you need to begin the process of Haggadah from Aleph Nisan. And that's exactly what the Haggadah says. Yachol me Rosh Chodesh. I would think that you should be, the mitzvah Haggadah is really from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Tilmod lomar bayom hahu. And therefore we have to understand when the Pasuk says, Vigadat ala bincha bayom hahu lemor, it's not referring to a month in which you do the mitzvah Haggadah, it's referring to a day that you do the mitzvah Haggadah. That the mitzvah Haggadah is tied to a given day. Bayom hahu. And therefore, of course, that itself is Rash, because Bayom Hahu can also refer to a period of time in Mikra. But we won't get into that. The Haggadah is a Drash, it's a Midrash. So Bayom Hahu means on a specific day. So which specific day could this be? The Baal HaHaggadah says, well, if it has to be a specific day, it would make sense that it would be Yudalit Nisan, the day of the Korban Pesach. And so Eitan is asking, I cut out for a second, did you say where Yahol is from? The original source? The original source is here in the Haggadah. It's here in the Haggadah. The Haggadah is an original source, original Tanaitic source. And so the Baal Haggadah is saying, I might have thought from Rosh Chodesh. No, it says Bayom Ahu. So if it says Bayom Ahu, it should mean from Yudalit Nisan, when the Korban Pesach is offered. That's the strongest representation of the process that we have. So the Midrash says, Tilmod Lomar Ba'avur Zeh, that Bayom Ahu is not only a given day, it's when you can point to something, Ba'avur Zeh, this, these things. Now, in order to do that, you need to have the props available. When are the props available? Not when you shech the Pesach. When you shech the Pesach, you slaughter the Pesach, you have to do the process preparing it for roasting. And then you roast it, and when you sit down to the Seder, you have all of the appurtenances of the Seder with you, all of the props, the matzah, and the maror, the charoset, the korban pesach, everything sitting in front of you. So you can point to it, you can say, ba'avur zeh. And therefore, we learn, the Baal HaMidrash, the Baal HaGadah, learns that the mitzvah of Higadat Levincha is relevant for Seder night, not from the 1st of Nisan, and not on the 14th, but on Seder night when all of the props are in front of you and you can explain to a child visually. Now this is very, very interesting, because it wasn't until modern times, with the development of educational theories about multiple intelligence, that Western society finally caught up to what Chazal said 2,000 years ago. And I don't mean to be pejorative, I just to state the fact that Western educational theory lags many, many, many hundreds of years behind Jewish educational theory. And Jewish educational theory says that if you want to teach something, you need to teach it in various ways. You need to teach it orally. You need to teach it visually. You need to teach it tactilely. You need to teach it with activities. You have to teach it in a way that where it becomes an experience and not just a lecture. And that's what this section of the Haggadah is telling us. But once we've established when you do the mitzvah Haggadah and to whom you're doing the mitzvah of Haggadah, and I forgot to mention, but I want to slip in here, regarding the four types of children, the beautiful statement of the Kotzko Rebbe, which should really be important for all of us, that the Kotzko Rebbe said, "Ein biltil shaveh mitipul shaveh bebiltil shavim." There's nothing more unequal than equal treatment of the unequal. Again, there's nothing more unequal than equal treatment of the unequal. And this is, should be our motto in our the way we educate our children and our students, that each one is an individual. They're not equal, they're not the same, and each one deserves special attention. Now, let's get back to the Haggadah. The Mishnah told us that lefi da'atosha ben aviv melamdo, you have to teach the child according to his ability. Okay, we've seen how the Haggadah implements that. Then the Mishnah said, matchil b'gnut u'mesayim b'shvach, that you should begin with the negative and proceed toward the positive. And as you all know, there is an argument in the Gemara, in the Masechet Pesachim there, what is the negative and what is the positive that is being referred to by the Talmidei Chachamim in the Mishnah. And the machloket was whether it refers to the slavery in Egypt, that we were slaves and we became free, or does it refer to the fact that we were once spiritually enslaved and became spiritually free. What is the avdut? What is the slavery? And what is the freedom? Is it the bodily slavery and a bodily freedom, which we mentioned as the headline of the Magid immediately after the four questions? Avadim hayinu lefarov b'mitzrayim v'yotzeinu Hashem Elokeinu misham? Or is it a spiritual slavery and a spiritual freedom, as it says here in the next paragraph of the Haggadah, mitchila uvdei avodah zarah hayu avotenu v'achshav kirvanu hamakom la'avodato? And you have to ask, of course, since there are these two different opinions, why was Avadim Hayinu brought first and Mitchila brought here? Why wasn't done reversed after all? What's more important, the spiritual element or the physical? And if we are Westerners, we would naturally answer the spiritual is more important because Western society is filled with denigration of the physical world. But since we are not Westerners, we are Jews. We are children of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Kiddushim, B'nei Kiddushim, Ma'aminim, B'nei Ma'aminim. We know that the physical world is Kadosh, is holy, no less than the spiritual world. It's a reflection of the spiritual world that was created by Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the processes that happen in the physical world are no less important than those that happen in the spiritual world. And we are engaged in Tikkun Olam. And therefore, it's only natural that you should begin with the physical world, because the physical world is what you experience. And it's only through contemplation of the physical universe that one can even approach understanding of the spiritual universe. The physical universe is not an impediment to understanding the spiritual world. It is an instrument, it's a utensil for understanding the spiritual world. And therefore, we start with Avadim Hayinu at the very beginning, because that can be understood by anyone, even those who do not understand anything about the spiritual world. When they are physically enslaved and then they are free, they understand the message. And I knew someone who, at this point in the Seder, would actually take cinder blocks, concrete blocks, and have, which he prepared in advance, of course, so they would be mukhan. And he would have the children walk around the Seder table carrying cinder blocks until he told them to stop, so they would sense a little bit physically what exactly is going on. And then here we get to the spiritual, deeper message, which is that we were slaves spiritually. We worshipped Avodah Zarah. And now Kodesh Baruch Hu has brought us to his service. And this is what fulfills the second part of what the Mishnah said, that not only do you have to teach the child according to his ability, but you also need to begin with the negative and proceed to the positive. And this becomes a message for each and every person at the Seder in their own Yetziat Mitzrayim, because existentially each one of us is experiencing slavery and redemption from slavery, each with our own limitations and our own restrictions, and our ability to overcome them. And that one always begins with the negative and moves to the positive. That's the nature of the Jewish people. Now we get to the main dish. All of this has been by way of hors d'oeuvre. But when the Mishnah tells us, Doresh me arami ovedavi achig mor kol haparasha kula, it means that in order to really fulfill the answer, there has to be a midrash of these psukim, as we're going to see, and that through the midrash, one fulfills magid. Now, what is this drash, and how does drash fulfill the mitzvah of higadat halavincha? At this point, in building the Haggadah, the Tanaim were looking for a concise way to put over the ideas of the Yetziat Mitzrayim, and they took for themselves the Vidui Bikurim, which appears in Devarim Perek Kaf Dalet, the psukim there that are said by the Jew when he brings his first fruits to the Beit Mikdash. And they took these psukim and they made them the basis of the Haggadah, of the Midrash, which is the heart of the Haggadah. And therefore, it's impossible to understand the Magid without first understanding these psukim and seeing them as the basis of the story. Unfortunately, when all you have in front of you is your Haggadah, and most Haggadot print these materials as a textual flow without any organizational pattern to help you conceive of what's being said, it's hard to understand this. And therefore, I want to make a practical suggestion. Take four pieces of Bristol, that is of poster board, large pieces, and put on each of one of these posters one of the four psukim that at the beginning of Arami Ovedavi, and put every pasuk on this poster board in a way where the pasuk is broken up in chunks according to the way it's broken up by the Magid. In other words, in the first pasuk, Arami Oved Avi, Vayerit Mitzrayma, Vayagar Sham Bimtei Ma'at, Vayisham Legoi Gadol Latzum Verav, the Haggadah will take this pasuk and it'll divide it up into little pieces for the Midrash. So on your poster board, put the pasuk in that way. Break it into those little chunks that the Haggadah is going to use. All of it, of course, on one board, this one pasuk. And make these four posters of the four psukim and put them up in your dining room where the Seder is going to take place, so they are and large enough so they're visible to everyone who's participating in the Seder. And go over these four psukim before you move further in the Haggadah, before you start the Tzei Ulamad, the Arami Oved Avi. Before you begin this, just look at the psukim and understand them according to pshat. What does the Jew say when he brings his Bikurim to the Beit Mikdash? So Jim Diamond from Princeton is saying, what about Baruch Shomer of Tachato and Vihisha Amda? Okay, yeah, these are also these paragraphs are also introductory, but I want to deal now with the core of the Magid, which is the Tzei Ulamad. In any event, you put these four posters up and you go over them with the people at the Seder, so make sure they understand the Pshat, and I'll give you an example of what I mean by understanding Pshat. If you ask most people what does it mean, Arami Oved Avi, they'll tell you that it means that Lavan tried to destroy Yaakov. This, of course, has nothing whatsoever to do with the Pshat of the Pasuk. The Pshat of the Pasuk of Arami Oved Avi means, my father, Avi, was an Arami Oved, was a wandering Aramean. Yaakov was a wandering Aramean. Because, why wandering Aramean? Because he wandered to Aram and back. He was wandering around within the area of Aram, Aram Naharaim, Padan Aram. And therefore, the Pasuk is referring to Yaakov. It's not referring to Lavan at all. It has nothing to do with, the Pasuk has nothing to do with Lavan. And the Pshat, understanding the Pshat of the Psukim, gives the people at the Seder a basis for understanding what exactly it is the Baal HaMagid wants to accomplish through the Midrash. So let's take a look at these four psukim and let's understand what it is they're trying to say, and then we're going to take a look at the Midrash and what it's trying to accomplish. What are these four psukim? Arami Oved Avi tells this, the first pasuk tells the story of how we got to Egypt in the first place. That Yaakov was wandering, he wandered eastward first to Padan Aram, to Aram Naharaim, and there he had the long experience with Lavan and with his family, came back to Eretz Israel, wandered then down into Mitzrayim because of what happened with Yosef. And he finds himself in Mitzrayim as a small tribe, Shivim Nefesh. And then they became a Goy Gadol Atzum Varav. The second Pasuk says that we were enslaved by Mitzrayim. This Pasuk says, this is step two in the process. The first step was we came down into Mitzrayim. The second process was they enslaved us. The third process, the third process is that in our suffering, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was aware of what we were going through. He was He was aware of our suffering. And what was the last pasuk? That he took us out of Mitzrayim. And therefore, there are four stages that we need to explain. The first is how we got to Mitzrayim. What happened to us there? Hashem hears our suffering, and Hashem acts in history in order to save his people. These are the four fundamental points of the story that Chazal wanted to stress. However, once we have these four headlines, Chazal took every item within these four headlines and tried to explain them the Derech Hadrush, by way of Midrash, or meaning, which is behind the Pshat. It's of course critical, as in all instruction of Jewish sources, to separate Pshat from Drash, and not to mix them, to make sure that the children and actually all, and the adults as well, everyone at the table understands what is Pshat and what is Drash, because then you can ask the question, why would Chazal be Doresh? Why would they interpret the Pasuk the way they did? What values are they trying to express? Midrash is not meant literally. Midrash is meant spiritually. And so we want to understand the Pshat of the Pasuk, and then we want to say, what exactly are Chazal trying to teach us? And so what we do in our home, we've done this now for 30 years, 35 years, and it works better every year. I would recommend that after you put up these four posters on your wall, and you have the four Pesukim there, and you go over the four Pesukim, you then divide all the participants in the Seder into two teams. The Mikra team, the Pasuk team that is, and the Midrash team. And to go through one Pasuk at a time, antiphonally, where the Mikra team reads the parts that are quoted from the Pesukim, and the Midrash team answers with the Midrash of Chazal. For instance, on the first Pasuk, everyone will say together the opening of the Drash, Sei Ulamad, that is, come and learn. Or more midrashically, leave your present state of mind and learn what it is I'm trying to teach you about the Yetziat Mitzrayim. Sei ulamad, ma bikesh Lavan ha'arami la'asot le'Yaakov Avinu, sheparo lo gazar ela al hascharim, ve'Lavan bikesh la'kor et hakol. And this is where we receive the concept that Arami Ovid Avi refers to Lavan, because it's the Midrash. It's not the Pshat of the Pasuk, it's the Midrash. So, and then the Mikra team, the Pasuk team, will read the Pasuk. Arami Oved Avi Vayerit Mitzrayma Vayarkar Sham Bimtei Ma'at Vayisham L'Goy Gadol Atzum V'Rav. And then the Pasuk team will continue and say Vayerit Mitzrayma. And the Midrash team will answer, and the Mikra team will say Vayagor Sham. And the Midrash team will answer Melamed Shelo Yerad Avinu L'Ishtakev B'Mitzrayim Ela L'Gor Sham Shneamar Vayumru El Paro L'Gor Baretz Banu Kein Mir Latzon Asher L'Avadecha Ki Chaved Harav Eretz Kanan V'Ata Yeshvuna Avadecha Beretz Goshen. That's all Drash, okay? Because it's the way of Drash to take a pasuk that you want to interpret, give an idea, bring a secondary pasuk to explain the deeper meaning of what you're trying to say, and then you go back to the original pasuk. That's midrashic style. It's circular. And so therefore, if you have this antiphonal work going on in the home as you're doing this the Seder, then you would go through the entire pasuk, the first pasuk, antiphonally, and then you would go back and ask, okay, now what are the ideas that the midrash is trying to express? And let's just take an example or two. Vayerid Mitzrayma. He went down to Mitzrayim. The pasuk presents Yaakov's travels as the natural wanderings of an Aramean who travels east, he travels south, there's bad conditions in the land, he leaves, he goes back. But what does the Midrash say? The Midrash says, Anus al pi adibur. Anus al pi adibur. Yaakov thought he was wandering because of the physical circumstances surrounding him. That had nothing whatsoever to do with what was going on. Yaakov's life was an instrument for the Hashgacha. He was anus. He was forced into doing what he was doing. Al pi adibur, by God's speech, by God's command. God's command was that the physical environment should arrange itself in such a way that he would have to wander east, and the physical environment would arrange it in such a way that he'd have to wander south to Mitzrayim. It wasn't only just the sequence of coincidences of events that led him to flee to the east, or to migrate to the south after the incidents of Yosef. This was a spiritual plan. He was a tool in the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to accomplish what had to happen. It's similar to what Rav Kook says, that Pesach is not now because it's the springtime. It's springtime because it's Pesach. In other words, that the physical world reflects the spiritual world. What God decrees works itself out in the physical world. And sometimes we go through our lives and we think that we're just kind of being buffeted from side to side by the winds of circumstance. But really, every wave in the wind of circumstance is really hashkacha. And that it's going to take us through a series of events that in the end is going to lead us to an awareness that we require. So anus al pi hadibur, vayagor sham. And of course here the Medrash picks up on the word vayagor. It doesn't say that he went lashavet sham, but he went lagur sham. That he meant to. He was after all a wandering Aramean. So melamed shelo yarad Yaakov avinu lishtakev b'Mitzrayim ela lagur sham. And it brings a supplementary pasuk. And b'matei ma'at, well, how many was matei ma'at? 70. And then they became a great nation. Now, what we've tried to show here is that if you take all, we don't have time to go through all four of the psukim, but it's the same principle by all of them. If you take each one of these four psukim and you read it antiphonally, and then you break it into the pieces and you ask, what is the midrash asking that can embellish what the pshat of the pasuk is saying? Then what you're doing is you're creating a multiple levels of meaning in the Pesach story. And that's what Midrash is. Midrash means I'm not interested in what the Pshat is. I'm interested in what the deeper meaning of the text is for me, for us, for this period of time, for this place, for this set of circumstances. And this is very central to the Torah. You know that by the counting of the words of the Torah, the central words of the Torah are, which we read in Parshat Shmini, Darosh Darash Moshe, Darosh Darash, that those are the two words on either side of the central point of the Torah, because for the Jew, the Torah is there for Midrash. It's not a historical document. The Torah is not a historical document. It doesn't matter to us whether the historical perspective in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah is exactly as it would be if we were to have archaeological evidence. That's not relevant. What's relevant is that beyond its historical messages, the Torah is being designed as a midrash on life. And that the midrash on life dictates to us values and hashkafot and emunot and mitzvot and all sorts of things to guide us in the way we should live. It's not to teach us history. And therefore, the midrash is the heart of Torah. Because midrash means that I'm going to take the pshat, I'm aware of what the pshat is. I don't try to fool myself or others into thinking that my midrash is the pshat of the pasuk. No, it's not the pshat of the pasuk. But my midrash is my pshat. It's pshat of me. It's not the pshat of the pasuk. It's the pshat of me. And so, why did Chazal make a midrash of the four pasukim the centerpiece of the Magid? Because Magid doesn't mean tell your child what happened. Magid is tell your child what's happening. That everyone has to see himself as if he went out of Mitzrayim. That he's going out of Mitzrayim. And therefore, the Ikar is not to tell the story of what was, but what is. That what happened is still happening. It's happening now. Behold, Dor V'Dor, Bayim Aleinu V'Chamotenu. And the process that went through, the four-stage process, that we get into a circumstance, one way or another, that we are affected negatively by where we are, that we cry out to Hashem, and that He saves us. These four stages are universal. They're in every time and every place and with all Jews. Sometimes the process takes longer, sometimes shorter, but it always comes out the same way. And as my sister once said to me, that all Jewish holidays can be summarized with three short statements. They tried to kill us. God saved us. Let's eat. And there's a certain amount of truth in that. And the Haggadah is telling us that when we go through the story, we're trying to relive it so that we can understand our own lives. And that's Midrash. That's not Pshat. if the Haggadah was only interested in teaching history, it would have brought the four psukim and finished. That would have been the end of it. Don't need more than that. But the Haggadah is bringing us the midrash of the four psukim. V'doresh me'aramir, not v'korei me'arami ovidavi. Not that he should read in the language of Mikra, read the four psukim. He should be doresh in the language of Midrash of the four psukim. Okay, so I recommend in the next couple of weeks you go through this Midrash, and if you have questions about the Midrash, you can write to me by email, and we'll discuss the Midrash back and forth. Now let's get on to another point. Those of you who look into Devarim Kaf Dalet, you'll see that the Parashat Bikurim, which begins with Arami Ovedavi, does not have four psukim. It has five. There's a fifth pasuk. The fifth pasuk is V'yevienu ala makom hazeh V'yitin lanu et ha'aretz hazot Eretz avat chalav udvash. That's the fifth pasuk. V'yevienu ala makom hazeh. Eitan is asking from Toronto, could you argue that the point of the Midrash is to allow everybody the opportunity to expound on the story? Absolutely. That's exactly what I meant to say. Absolutely. So the fifth pasuk, Vayivienu lamakom hazeh, is not part of the Magid. Where is it? The Mishnah said, Ad shegomer et kol haparasha kula. The whole parasha. All five psukim. But we only have four in the Magid. Why only four? I think the answer is that, as we mentioned before, the Haggadah is a production of the Tanaim of Yavne. And this is the Tanaim in Yavne, Trianus, and were destroyed. At the end of the Yavne period, you have the Mered Bar Kokhba. We're dealing with a very painful time. Jews are spreading to the four corners of the world. Can you imagine in the year 85, 90, and you still remember the Beit Mikdash, you sit down to your Seder, and you read the words, Vayivienu el makom hazeh, Vayitein lanu et ha'aretz hazot, Eretz zavat chalav udvash. That would turn the Seder into a wake, Rahman al-Itzlan. Jews would cry. Sitting at the Seder, they would cry. Where would Simchat Achag be? And so Chazal said, we won't be darish that fifth pasuk. It's not appropriate right now. It's not part of the story we're trying to put across. We're putting across the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim as an archetype, prototype for the Geula that's going to come. However, Rabotai, just as I mentioned at the beginning of the lesson when we talked about the four questions, there's always a fifth in the background. Just as there's a fifth question in the background of the four questions, there's a fifth pasuk in back of the four psukim. Vayivienu l'makom hazeh. And also by the four lishonot, for which the one of the explanations for the four cups of wine, the four languages of redemption brought down in Parshat Vayira. So we have a fifth language there. There it also says Vayivieti etchem el haaretz. So there's always a fifth standing in the background. And so, because I live in Eretz Yisrael, and according to the teachings of Moreno Ravenu, Rav Kook, we are living in the time of Geula. The Kibbutz Galuyot is real. It's not just a coincidence. Therefore, in our home, we are Doresh, the fifth Pasuk. I put a fifth Pasuk, the fifth Pasuk, I put this on another poster board, and I put it on the opposite wall, opposite the four. And we take the midrash of this fifth pasuk from the midrash of Sifri Devarim, which is the halachic midrash on Devarim, from the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Akiva. And there it says, "Vayivienu el makom hazeh," is the Beit Mikdash. Vayitin lanu et ha'aretz hazot is Eretz Yisrael, Eretz avat chalav udvash. And we interpret this, we read this drash, and we talk about the implications of the Geulah for our day. And so the fifth pasuk plays a very important role in us tying the process that Chazal began 2,000 years ago with what we are experiencing today, which is the beginning of the realization of their dream of the Geulah Shlema. And connected to this issue of the fifth pasuk is the issue of the cups of wine. We all drink four cups of wine, but behind the four, there's a fifth in the background, and the fifth cup of wine is there too. The fifth cup of wine, the kososh el Eliyahu. Why is it a cup of Eliyahu? It's not because Eliyahu is going to drink it. Ribono shel Olam, Jews don't believe in Santa Claus. It's because when Eliyahu comes into the world, we will drink the fifth cup of wine. That is, when Eliyahu brings Mashiach, the Gula will be here, then we will drink five cups. There are five cups that are mentioned in the Braitot, in the Gemara, that on the fourth cup of wine, you finish saying the Halel HaMitzri, and on the fifth cup, Birkat HaShir. So, those people that are not sure whether the fifth cup should be consumed, they leave it on the table, and they call it the Kosos Shel Eliyahu, because Tishbi Yitaretz Kushot VeBayot, and therefore the fifth cup will wait there until Eliyahu comes, and we'll have the fifth cup in our Seder after he arrives with Mashiach. And there are others who hold, and based on the writings of Rishonim, we won't get into it right now, we don't have time, that one should actually drink the fifth cup of wine. And in our home, we drink five cups of wine. We pour the fourth cup, and finish, after Birkat HaMazon, we pour the fourth cup, we say the finishing half of the Halel HaMitzri, we drink the fourth cup, we pour a fifth cup, we say all the way to Birkat HaShir, and we drink the fifth cup, and then finish the Seder. It's not obligatory, it's Kos Hamishi Rishut, but it adds a great deal to the Seder, because you realize that behind the structure of the Haggadah, which we discussed very briefly here, you have the series of four, the four children, there's a fifth, there's four questions, there's a fifth question in the background. Four children, there's really a fifth child in our day in the background, the one who isn't even there. There's four psukim, there's a fifth pasuk in the background, there's four cups, there's a fifth cup in the background. Peter Beauregard from Berkeley is asking, still the basic text of the Haggadah is for all of us, no matter how broken we are historically or personally, and if we don't have it in us to see the redemption in front of us, we can still be Yotzi on the Haggadah. Of course, Peter, of course you're correct. And I was only bringing the idea of the fifth pasuk and the fifth cup because I find that for us it adds a great deal. It's all reshut. It's not part of the obligatory elements of the Haggadah. And no matter how deep into the galut we find ourselves, we still are living in a time which is transcending it. And we can be Yotzei the Haggadah with just what's in the Haggadah. But if those of you are interested in connecting your Seder and your Haggadah to the events of our day, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu has remembered His people and brought us back to Tzion, that it's possible to incorporate that into the Haggadah within the framework of the Masoret as brought down in the Gemara and the Rishonim. There's plenty of room for it, and maybe at another time we can give a lesson on that point, about how these things are derived. But for those of you that have the Haggadah of Menachem Mendel Kasher, the Haggadah Shlema, he has in the back of that Haggadah a very long discourse about the Kos Chamishi, and there you can see all the Mikorot that describe why it's done and who did it and when and its relevance for us today. All right, now let's summarize and then leave some time for some questions. What we've been trying to discuss here is the same principle that we discuss when we learn Gemara together on Sundays, and that is that content is a function of form. Not like in Western literature, where form is a function of the content. For us, content is a function of form. Just as in the Mishnah there are kvatzim in the Mishnah, those of you that have been learning with me know what I'm talking about, and that those kvatzim in the Mishnah dictate the way that the content is going to be arranged. And the Gemara has form also in terms of the fixed structures, the fixed templates, the sugyas in the Gemara. The Haggadah also has a structure, and its structure dictates its content. The minute you have that the Tanaim tell us in the Mishnah that there are the four questions, and then Lefi da'ato shel ben aviv melamdo matchil begnut mesayim b'shvach v'doresh me'arami oved avi ad shigmor kol ha'parasha kula. These are the instructions of the Tanaim and the Mishnah, and that is to be fulfilled in the structure of the Haggadah, which flows in the Magid the way I have described to you. So this is what I wanted to present to you. Are there questions, either through the use of your microphones or in writing? Chaim Bessin is writing as follows. We have two questions. Let's take them one at a time. Chaim saying, how do you view and explain a different drashot of the number of plagues at Yam Suf? How do the kids connect to it? Okay, that's a very important question. The first and most important principle is it's not meant literally. It's not meant literally. And it's important to put this over to the children that we're not trying to say that there were 50, there were 200, 250 makot. That's not at all what the Haggadah is trying to say. The Haggadah is trying to say that we have so much to be grateful for, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in every act that he does, his actions are complex, and that in every action that he does are many actions from our perspective. So 10 plagues could have been 50 plagues, 200 plagues, 250 plagues. No matter how many plagues we want to multiply, we will never come to even an approximation of all the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. And therefore, who can think of a way that we can understand that there were 500, that there were 1,000 plagues? HaKadosh Baruch Hu strikes our enemies with limitless suffering in order to relieve Am Yisrael from the torture at their hands. And that and that's all it's trying to say. And so the Chachamim are interpreting the word Yad, the Yad Hashem, there were five, and ten becomes 50, and then they bring a pasuk from the Navi that 50 becomes 200 because there are four elements in each makah, or really there are five elements in each makah. These are midrashim in order to tell us that within every action of a Kodesh Baruch in the world, when you analyze it, you see that it's complex, it's compound, and there's a great deal to be thankful for. But it's not meant literally. Now, Eitan Diamond is asking, it is interesting, just a minute before we get to David Eisen's question, Eitan Diamond is asking, it is interesting that the Tosefta has virtually nothing to say about the contents of the Magid. Does that imply a general consensus about the message and the intent of the Magid section? That's a very good question, Eitan. I don't know what to tell you. It's true that there's nothing in the Tosefta about this. It might imply consensus. It might imply that we don't have all of the Tosefta. I don't know. We can only say what's there. We should be careful about going too far afield with our explanation of it. But it could be. Now, David Eisen in Beit Shemesh is asking, when do you date the Seder in Bnei Brak? Was it at the beginning of the Yavne period, or perhaps closer to the Bar Kokhba rebellion? And does this tie in to the age of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, as per the Rambam's wording of the Haggadah, Amar lehem hare ani kezen shivim shana? Okay, now if you take a look at those Chachamim that appear in the Haggadah, the five Skenim in Bnei Brak, they are Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Shua ben Chananya, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon. Now, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, it's very, very unlikely that they lived until the time of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Did they live until then? They lived in the time of the Mikdash. And they were Rabbi Akiva's teachers. And Rabbi Akiva was already old enough to comment on the Churban HaBayit when it was destroyed. That means his teachers must have already been in 60, 70 years old by the time the Churban HaBayit. And so to say that they lived until the Mered Bar Kokhba, another 70 years, would mean they had to have lived to be 130, 140 years old. So to me, it seems to me very likely that the five skenim were sitting together in Bnei Brak long before the Bar Kokhba rebellion, probably during the first half of the Avnah period, we have them listed, of course, according to their age, in the Haggadah, which is the appropriate way they should be listed. That's how all Tanaitic literature lists Chachamim. So I would assume that it's quite significantly before the period of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. As far as your point about the age of Elazar ben Azariah, yes, I think that makes good sense that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah maybe was already we already had the event where of Shabbat Shalmi, where he replaced Rabban Gamliel for a time, and then he came back. Rabban Gamliel came back, and probably the first generation of Yavne. Now, David Eisen in Beit Shemesh is asking, probably this also took place prior to Rabbi Eliezer's excommunication. Well, I would assume so. That's right. Okay, well, I think we've had a brief introduction to the Haggadah. It's time for me to return to my my travels here in the southern United States to bring methods of Torah Shebaal Peh to as many schools as I can. If any of you have any further questions about the Haggadah, please do respond to this lesson and write to me, and I'll be happy to answer by email up until the minute before we enter Chag HaPesach. And Bob said, I missed what you said, that there was a fifth question behind the four. Please repeat. Okay, well, the fifth question is because the four questions that we have in the Haggadah now are the questions that are relevant to the period after the Churban HaBayit. The fifth question that I was referring to is the one that appears in the Mishnah that does not appear in our Haggadah, which is the fifth question about the Korban Pesach, that on all other nights we eat meat roasted, boiled, and bubbled, but on Seder night only roasted. And if you look in the Mishnah, the 10th chapter of Tzachim, you'll see that Mishnah Dalet, you'll see that this question is brought there, and its question is hovering in the air, waiting to return every year, that we should be successful in offering Korban Pesach and bring that question back. We should be all zoche to see the Binyan Beit HaMikdash and enjoy Korban Pesach this year, an end to the troubles of Am Yisrael, Vayotzienu Hashem Mi'adam, and that we will be zoche to eat min ha-psachim u min ha-shlamim. So be very well, and we'll see you, Bezrat Hashem, at our next shiur as planned. Kol tuv, Shavua tov, Chodesh tov, and Shana tova.